We're in Genesis chapter 43, and I'd like for us to start at verse number 11. We have moved probably a year plus past when the brothers first went to Egypt in the first year of the famine, the first harvest year of the famine, and purchased grain and lost Simeon. They came back to their father with the deal that Joseph, incognito, had given them. Bring your little brother back here. Prove that you are telling me the truth, and I'll let Simeon go. And so Jacob, Israel, is not going to agree to that. He is holding on tight to the remaining son of his beloved late Rachel. And so he writes Simeon off. And that's kind of a sad thing to think about, but it is true. But then, after planting and seeing another bad year of rain, or no rain, actually, and another bad growth cycle, and a horrible harvest season, they have been using up their grain supplies, their existing grain supplies, that pretty much consist of what they got last year. And Dad says, you got to go and get more. And of course, he then is reminded that unless they take Benjamin, there's no way in the world that they'll be allowed to come back from Egypt with grain, if they're allowed to come back at all. And so it all ends up with Judah telling Dad, as the heir, telling Dad, you can do whatever you want to me if I come back here without Benjamin in tow. And I think he was actually offering to be done in as the heir. So, verse 11, their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. You take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the man. Now, the man he's referencing is Joseph. Doesn't know it's Joseph, but all he knows is that he is the administrator of the kingdom. He is the vizier. He is the right-hand man to Pharaoh. He's the one that's put them in this situation. So let's grease the wheels a little bit. Let's put a little little bribe together. Now, bribe in its best sense. Little present, a little thank you for considering us, that sort of thing. And so he says, you take things from here that are valued there. And what's that list? A little bit of balm. The balm of Gilead. That is the balm of the east side of the Jordan River, which they harvested from the trees. The resin was quite famous. And so a little bit of that and a little bit of honey. Remember that later the Israelis will have the promised land described to them as being a land of milk and honey, a place where there's not just simply lots of agriculture and therefore lots of bees making lots of honey, but honey is also used to describe kind of the sweet juiciness that comes with a lot of the summer fruits and things. So a little bit of honey, gum, again, another tree product, myrrh, a plant product, pistachio nuts, and almonds. So these are all things that do well, are produced well in the Promised Land, and are of great value along the Nile. So you take that, and then verse 12, you take double the money with you. That is, take all that money that you brought back last time with you, that should have been paid last time, and then you take enough for this purchase time so that you will be perfectly paid up on your accounts. So take all that with you. And a little reminder here, money was not being coined yet. That happens much later in history. At this time, gold and silver takes the form of little mounds, or in the case of the Egyptians, apparently little sticks or something like that. And so you take that value of gold and silver back with you twice, carry back with you this money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Now, I'm guessing he knows better than that. There is something very weird about the whole thing, because the Egyptians are exceptionally good at accounting. Even now, we have ancient records of where they counted, I believe, even grains of seed in some circumstances. So they were big into that. So it's highly unlikely it was an accounting oversight. Verse number 13, take also your brother, that'd be Benjamin, and arise, go again to the man. And then he offers a benediction. He offers a prayer. May God Almighty, this is El Shaddai, the God of my chest, is I think what really is being expressed here, my personal God, and that's what you see in the Greek translation of the Old Testament. But it could be the sense of the mighty God. That's what a lot of people believe. May he grant you mercy before the man, and may he send back your other brother, that'd be Simeon, and Benjamin. So that's his prayer. But then here is his sad acknowledgement of what another possibility is. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, then I'm just bereaved. So if Benjamin doesn't come back, if Simeon doesn't come back, if none of you come back, then that's just the way it's going to have to be. So the men took this present. They took double the money with them and Benjamin. And they arose and they went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. Now, I'd love to know what Benjamin thought about this whole thing. This is likely the first time he's ever gone out of the long-term presence of his father and of his mother. So it is a bit of an adventure, but it is also a little bit of a scary prospect. Not only is he going to a foreign country, he is going to stand before a foreign ruler. Somebody that has accused his big brothers of being spies, and he's kept one of his brothers for over a year in custody. That's a pretty scary thing when you're 21 years of age. Verse number 16. Now when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, so again, he is administering the sales of grain to an influx of foreign nationals that are coming to this dedicated storehouse area. And he's keeping an eye on the whole process. And suddenly he spots his nine brothers plus one more. And so he said to the steward of his house, this is the guy that runs things for his private residence, bring the men into the house, slaughter an animal, make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon. So he gives orders that there's going to be a big lunch, that he's going to have 11 foreign nationals join him for dinner. So this steward is basically required to put on a special banquet in a matter of hours. So the man did as Joseph told him, and he brought them into Joseph's house. So not into the distribution center, which is where they met him last time. They are escorted to the private residence of the number two guy in Egypt. Now, verse 18 comes as a little bit of an understatement then. The men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house. So they are terrified that they have been diverted from the more public area of food distribution to foreign nationals to the private residence of the vizier. And so they said to each other, it's because of the money which was replaced in our sacks that first time that we're brought in. Oh, he's going to assault us and fall upon us and make us servants and seize our donkeys. He's basically going to attack us and turn us into his slaves and confiscate our belongings. And so they went up to the steward of Joseph's house and spoke to him at the door of the house and said, oh, my lord, we came down the first time to buy food, and when we came to the lodging place, we opened our sacks, and there was each man's money in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we've brought it again with us, and we brought other money down with us to buy food. We don't know who put our money in our sacks. So they're functioning under this belief that the accounting records are the reason that they've been grabbed and sent over to the private residence. And so they appeal, as they anticipated they would. We don't know how that happened, but we have come prepared to give not just that money back, but pay the full price for the next load of grain that we need to take. Now, I love the response of Joseph's household, majordomo, who's well aware of all this. He seems to have been briefed on some of the details of what Joseph had in mind here. So he replied, peace to you. Don't be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money. So somehow this household head was involved in the last episode of the brothers being in town. That somehow he was the one that was personally responsible for taking their money. And so he tells them, no, I got your money. I know exactly where your money is. I know exactly what it was used for. Apparently, your God gave you your money back. And the phrasing that he uses here, and he might be talking through a translator as well. His phrasing, though, is very specific to Jacob's family line, because they talk about a singular God who is the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and now the God of Jacob. And so they start talking about your God and the God of your father. So he's talking to them on their terms. He's talking to them in the phraseology of their faith. So he puts them at ease with that, and then he brought Simeon out to them. Now, Simeon, I'm sure, he's got a lot of questions and a lot of stories. And so there's a lot of talking back and forth between this bunch. Now, it is my opinion that Simeon was very well treated being here in Egypt. Yes, I think he was probably in the pit where he was having to do work details, but I think he was getting plenty of food and being kept well hydrated, and the jobs were not too exhausting for his capabilities. And so I don't think he looks any worse for the wear, other than wondering, if he'd ever get home. And so now I think he's pretty excited that his brothers are back, although he might be, you know, a little excited as in frustrated as to why? Why didn't you work harder at getting me out of here sooner? But that's just part of the drama that we have to imagine. Now, verse 24. When the man had brought the men into Joseph's house and given them water and they had washed their feet, so good hospitality here, and when he had given their donkeys fodder, this is another form of hospitalities, you water and feed the animals that belong to your guest, they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that he should eat bread there. So now they understand, we have not been invited to become slaves. We've been invited, for some strange reason, to have a meal with this number two guy in Egypt. And so they start figuring out, well, how are we going to present all of our goodies here? Because they brought a bunch. I mean, Jacob would have, if anything, gone overboard in sending all these products from the Holy Land, the Promised Land, to gain the goodwill of the vizier of Egypt. So the scene is now set for Joseph to come during the siesta time, you know, when it's hot enough that pretty much everything shuts down for several hours. And so here comes Joseph for lunch. Verse 26, when Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present they had with them and bowed down to him to the ground. So we're back to the fulfillment of the dreams that Joseph had earlier in his life. His brothers are bowing to him without knowing it. Then he inquired about their welfare, because remember, he hasn't seen them for probably over a year. And he also said, is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive? Now, that's a valid question, given that it has been an entire agricultural season. Is he still alive? And they said, your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive. And they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. This is the appropriate physical way of showing submission in the Egyptian court, is to not just simply bow at the waist or bow at the neck, but you actually get down on the ground and put your forehead on the ground. And so they do that. And so he then lifted up his eyes and he saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son. Now, he saw him at a distance earlier, but now he sees him up close. And I can't help but highlight the fact that mom is brought into focus here again. Because my guess is that Joseph can see in his brother Benjamin a little bit of the mom side of the genetic pool. He sees a little bit of his mother, his long-dead mother, 20 years ago, there in his little brother's face. And he said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? Now, he already knows the answer. And he's talking through translators again. And so you got to give time for both directions happening with translation. And so he said, God be gracious to you, my son. And then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother. His emotion overwhelmed him physically so that he could not help needing to leave the room or be found out of totally breaking down and sobbing. His compassion grew warm for his brother. He sought a place to weep. He entered his chamber and he wept there. So he basically leaves the dining area, the assembly area, and he runs off to his sleeping area. And he cries his heart out at seeing his baby brother all grown up. Remember, the last time he saw him, his brother probably barely was toddling around, if at all. And now here is, he's a grown man that I believe has some of the features of mom in him. And so he gets control of himself. Verse 31 says he washed his face and came back out. So he puts his face back on, if you will. Maybe he has to touch up, you know, the black outliner that goes on his eyes, which is very Egyptian. Because you have to picture him as an Egyptian here. He's got that fancy white kilt. He's got the big gold neck shield or upper chest and neck shield. He's got probably a fancy headdress on, and he's got no natural hair anywhere. Maybe a fake beard, maybe a fake head of hair. And so he's got all of that, but he also has the makeup on his eyes. So he gets himself all back together again. And then it says, controlling himself, he said, serve the food. Now here comes a little interesting logistical part of the story. They served him by himself. So Joseph sat at one table all by himself. And them by themselves. So the 11 brothers are at a table by themselves. And then the Egyptians, apparently Egyptian guests of this lunchtime that Joseph may have already had them, you know, invited for the siesta meal. And so the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. So the Egyptians of this time period, the full-blood Egyptians, would not share a table with somebody who was not full-blood Egyptian. And that includes Joseph. Even though he is the number two guy in the kingdom, their custom, their tradition, their prejudice, yes, will not allow them to eat at the same table with him. And so he's just acclimated to that situation, and he eats by himself all the time. Even when he's in a group, he eats by himself. But also, in this case, he has to keep up appearances of not eating with his brothers because they have to be separate as well. Now, verse 33. They set before him the firstborn according to his birthright and the youngest according to his youth. Now, the youngest is a pretty easy placement because he is clearly only about 21. But the brothers are all up in their 40s, early 40s, and the very top part of the 30s. Joseph is 38, he's 39. This is the second year of the famine, so that would make him 39. So his next brother up would have been probably 39 and a half, maybe 40, and then the rest are up above that. All right, so they are so close in birth order, as I've mentioned before. A stranger would be hard-pressed to distinguish them by birth order. But guess what? Joseph knows. And Joseph had his servant seat them in birth order, starting from Reuben and finishing with Benjamin. And so the men looked at one another in amazement. They were shocked because some of them are only a matter of months apart in age because of the four moms that are involved. And so no one should be able to do this unless they've got some sort of inside information. Verse 34, portions were taken to them from Joseph's table. That's a special honor to have things cut up that have been presented to the highest person in the pecking order in the room and taken to your plate. It'd be like you going to some sort of fancy dinner with the president or the governor or some king or queen of another country, and they actually cut up a little bit of their steak or their chicken and put it on a plate and have it brought over to you. That would be a big deal, right? But Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. So Benjamin is really getting things poured onto his plate from Joseph's table, which indicates Joseph considers him a special guest of honor. And now everybody is much happier because it's clear that this is a happy occasion and we don't need to worry about being arrested or turned into slaves or anything like that. And Benjamin's going to go home with us. Everything's going to be fine. And so they drank and they were merry with him. And so they were very happy that things were going to work out. But because we're out of time, we will leave the next exciting part of the story until the next time we're back into God's Word.